Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:05 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 13th. Well, it looks like I'm heading back to Saudi Arabia in the middle of January, and last year's forum, the Strategic Minerals Forum, was, I think, particularly for me, a very educative experience. So I'm greatly looking forward to seeing what other people in the resources sector have to say about the outlook now that we are a year into an environment where we've had a great deal of volatility. And we've had a big move in oil prices. And in the last year, a war has started. And we've had a big move in oil prices up, then down. In just the last 2 weeks, oil prices have fallen from $100 to $75 and are now bouncing. So that's a 25% decline in the space of 2 weeks. So it's quite likely we're going to get at least a pause in consolidation here. The Saudi Arabian stock market rallied really impressively between 2020 and the middle of 2022, and subsequently has pulled back, then encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and is now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Very oversold in the short term, and clearly there is scope for a rebound, at least back towards the region of the 200-day moving average. This is what I find especially interesting right now, is that there's clearly the potential for a rebound in the crude oil price. It's quite oversold, bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So, and obviously we have had a big decline in a very short period of time. So there's scope for at least some pause and consolidation around this level. So Saudi Arabia has exhibited a lot more sensitivity to oil prices than oil shares. So the XLE spider, energy spider, is still right in the region of the peaks from back in 2014, and in fact all the way back to 2008. And it was in positive territory in here today. And as long as oil is rebounding, then that's likely to be beneficial for this sector. But there's nothing has really happened yet to question the conclusion that we're going to have a recession next year. And oil prices don't generally do well in that kind of environment. And today we saw that the CPI figures came in a little bit lower than expected. So that was positive. The survey was for a 0.3% move month over month, and it came in at 0.1%. And on a year-over-year basis, we're down now to about 7.1%. So that's certainly moving in the right direction. Now, of course, real average earnings are also falling, but not falling as much as they were the last time they were reported. So these are encouraging signs that inflation probably has peaked. So that's the good news. The bad news is that with inflation peaking, then there are a couple of reasons why. And it's first and foremost, the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates exceptionally aggressively. Then they have also been reducing the size of their balance sheet. And banks are not lending as much as they would normally. So liquidity conditions continue to tighten. So we had this pop on the upside in the NASDAQ right off the bat in the morning. And then it gave up the majority of the advance through to the close. So when we look at the performance of the major indices, the Dow Jones at one point was up in excess of 2% and finished out the day up a third of a percent. And the NASDAQ was up in excess of 3% and finished out the day up 1%. So there's certainly the potential here that now let's look at some of these indices on a weekly basis. We can then clearly see that we're seeing some resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average for the NASDAQ. It's a similar situation for the S&P 500. So it's also pausing here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Then if we go and look at the small caps, the Russell 2000 got right up to test the 200-day moving average this morning, finished out the day closer to the 1,000-day moving average. Now, we've seen occasions in the past where those two MAs have come back to test each other, but haven't broken one below the other. And the last time that occurred was in just before the big decline in 2008. So I think we're certainly at a rather difficult period here because corporate profits have not rolled over yet, but they are being pegged back, and an increasingly large number of analysts are expecting that they will roll over. We have a very inverted yield curve, negative 71 basis points right now. In fact, it is beginning to be less inverted, starting to turn back upwards here. I think it's particularly important to highlight that when we look at the yield curve spread, there are three phases. There is the initial inversion where people start to worry, but prices don't go down and the economic expansion is still intact. And usually, then people are more enthused by the fact that inflation is about to be brought back under control. So you usually see markets doing better after the initial inversion, although this occasion was different because as soon as we had the inversion, we had a meaningful setback. Then, as the yield curve stays inverted for a prolonged period of time, you get liquidity issues popping up, and we've seen plenty of those. And it's been truly global in nature. So we've had the UK pension issue, and that was a 100 billion issue. We've had significant credit events occurring in South Korea, and Legoland South Korea going bankrupt. Borrowers are refusing to buy back the bonds after the first call on a perpetual, which creates a liquidity issue for the owners of those bonds. And then when we think about the crypto sector, well, large numbers of crypto-related assets have been pulling back very violently in response to the FTX bankruptcy. Silvergate Capital, which has strongly collateralized a lot of the loans that it's made into the crypto sector, and does not rehypothecate its holdings, has also been selling off. It's down from 100 to 18 in the space of just the last few months. So we're seeing a really meaningful unwinding of risk in some of these exchange type offerings in the crypto sector. And it's all in response to this liquidity issue. And then we're starting to also see knock-on effects in the real estate sector. So the Blackstone and then the Starwood REITs, institutional REITs. So they're not actively traded by retail investors. These are REITs that are sold to institutional investors, have stopped redemptions. So this is really rather meaningful, and it suggests that we're in the second stage where you get liquidity events. But of course, because there's liquidity events occurring, then banks are stopping lending. And that also then restricts liquidity even more. And the third stage then is when the Federal Reserve starts reacting to economic weakness. So unemployment figures are beginning to turn, but they're not really rising in a big way. Most of the layoffs have been concentrated in the tech sector, and the tech sector is not an employment-dense sector. They are might be letting off 500, 600 people at a time. That's not going to move the needle in most economies. So it's starting in the tech sector. It will spread. Liquidity tightening up is certainly going to have a knock-on effect everywhere else. But high yield spreads are still quite low and have not spiked higher than 500 basis points. So this is moderating some of the risk perception. Then it's also worth highlighting that the VIX index had popped on the upside right off the open. And that was in response to, or pulled back, I should say, right off the open, in response to the bounce on stocks, and now is pairing that decline. I suspect now that we're going to see higher volatility in the not so distant future. And the sequence of higher reaction lows is still intact. The sequence of lower rally highs is still intact. And the balance of probabilities has to be that we're going to see additional downside. With the prospect of the, and I think the best way to look at this is with interest rate differentials. The prospect of the Federal Reserve raising rates 50 basis points tomorrow and then potentially 25 basis points later on and approaching the end of its interest rate hiking cycle is starting to erode the interest rate differential that's been in the dollar's favor over the course of the last 2 years. So this is looking really quite toppy. And the spread between the US 2 year and the EU 2 year is now breaking lower. So that's going to put downward pressure on the dollar. And the dollar index is back below its 200-day moving average and continuing to extend its decline. So that's also helping to support commodity prices, and particularly gold. So gold was up $30, or almost $30 in here today, and it is closing above that $1,800 area, which is a big psychological level because it was an area of support all the way between February and June of this year, and then it's been struggling to push above it. So if it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, that's going to be really very encouraging. And the GDX gold shares are right in the region of the 30 area. So 30 was the upper side of the base between 2013 and 2020. And then subsequently, it was an area of support in 2020 and 2021 and failed. So if it can push back above that level, then we can, I think, reasonably conclude that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. Then the silver miners are also pushing higher here and holding the move above the 200-day moving average, but they certainly have more work to do. And I think arguably the upper side of the base is more like $50, and we're a lot closer to the lower side of the base. When we think about silver miners, most of them also mine gold. So with gold prices popping on the upside, that means a lot more in terms of ounces mined than silver. But silver prices were up another 50 cents in here today and coming back into the region of $25. And we've had a meaningful rebound, considering that the price was not all that far away from $17 just a few months ago. It's now approaching 25. And that's a significant percentage gain. The most important point now, though, is that we have a short-term overbought condition, and it could easily consolidate. And as long as that consolidation holds in the region of the 200-day moving average, then that is looking really quite benign. And I think all of this range over the last 2 years looks like a first step above the base. Now, if the dollar is rolling over and international currencies are starting to do better, then it's going to make other markets look more attractive. So the Euro Stoxx Index has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it really does need to hold support in the region of the 200-day moving average. But I do think that what we're seeing right now is what might be described as a throwback rally. Corporate earnings are still going to come under pressure, and I do think that we're going to get more attractive buying opportunities in 2023, at least in the first half of the year. And then in China, the H share index was in positive territory, and I still think that we're going to see some pause in consolidation here, not least because there are so many new cases of COVID ramping higher all over China. And their number of cases has a fair way to go before they peak. So the end of the COVID zero policy is likely to be unruly, and that's going to weigh on some of these Chinese companies. But ultimately, the massive amount of liquidity that's been announced over the course of the last 2 months is going to have an impact. So we are likely to see some consolidation, but the lows are probably in. And then it's really a question of how quickly can China get the pandemic behind it and get back on a growth trajectory. And of course, if China's growth can recover after they deal with the pandemic, then that will be meaningfully important for oil prices and continued demand growth. So we're certainly in an interesting environment right now. What I've also thought was interesting is that since the election in Brazil, Brazilian equities have been rolling over. They exhibited a lot of relative strength all the way through 2020 and 2021. And now, with a new government, not only is the stock market rolling over, but the Brazilian real is also weakening. So they have really high interest rates, and inflation is rolling over. It's likely that Brazil will be among the first countries to cut interest rates. That'll be beneficial for the banking sector. They haven't done it yet, and the economy is weakening. So we're going to have to see some sort of better, more convincing plan for government to reinvigorate demand for Brazilian assets. So this is, I think, a rather delicate time for this sector. There are plenty of Brazilian stocks that have pulled back aggressively and are still going down. PagSeguro is one of those. It's the domestic fintech that's basically sponsored by the central bank, but still trending downwards because of those high interest rates and slowing economic growth. When those things turn around and when more liquidity moves into the global market, then a lot of these smaller fintech companies can do better. And Square has popped on the upside in here and continues to exhibit base formation characteristics. I think one of the most important things about some of the better established fintech companies is that the first thing is that some of them actually have free cash flow. So they are making money. And Square has 5 billion in cash and expects to have 538 million in free cash flow this year on a market cap of about 42 billion. So their debt load isn't especially high either. And PayPal is the big brother and hasn't quite yet been able to demonstrate support. It's not like PayPal doesn't make money, and they've got free cash flow in the region of about 5 billion. But they're not growing as quickly as Block is, and this is where there's going to be a lot of competition. But one thing that I think is also particularly relevant for some of these fintech companies is that they're not really involved in private assets. Whereas bigger banks like Goldman are really heavily involved in private assets. And a lot of hedge funds that are better at raising money than hedging have outsourced their hedge book to Goldman Asset Management. And those hedges are in very illiquid private assets, like private businesses, or they're in the commercial real estate of varying types. And some of those have got very long lockups. So most people, they're too eager to get into those structures and don't ask a lot of questions about what exactly are being invested in, because the returns have been so promising over the last decade. Now, Goldman rallied really impressively over the last few weeks, and now it's consolidating. And we've had quite a bit of volatility over the last few days. So it popped back up to 380 and then failed. Now, it's certainly consolidating, but if it starts pulling back below the 200-day moving average, then that's going to be meaningful. We are going to see a repricing of private assets before very long. And Brookfield Asset Management has split itself in half. So the risky part of the business is now below the IPO price at $30. And then the legacy part of the business continues to trend downwards. So still a downtrend overall. And this two-step and financial engineering is really what they have mastered and been world-renowned for. Creating funds, splitting them off, generating dividends from them, and then splitting them off and trying to preserve the main business and still guarantee income from various bits and pieces of it. This kind of financial engineering works wonders when interest rates are low and liquidity is abundant. It doesn't work so well when asset prices are falling, and particularly for property prices, they remain under pressure. And that is especially true of commercial properties. So I do think that some of these alternative asset managers are where the epicenter of risk resides, and they certainly need to be watched because there is the potential for significant blowback into the institutional investor sector, like pensions, charities, and endowments. And if they have to then recalibrate their portfolios, then you get contagion into the rest of the market. So we've certainly seen a more positive outlook in non-US dollar denominated assets, but we have not yet had the recession, and therefore, this relative performance is something that is unlikely to be a medium-term trend, and rather, we're going to get better buying opportunities more likely in 2023. When the Federal Reserve eventually does begin to loosen policy, then we're going to get a significant rebound in growthy kinds of companies. There's a lot of people still want to own them, and the big question then will be how generous will central banks be in their liquidity provision? And how scared will they be of allowing the inflation genie to get back out? Because the entire program right now is to try and kill off inflation, and they're going to be very alert to any kind of risk of stoking inflationary pressures again. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today. And I do apologize for all this trouble I've been having with Vimeo. So I'm afraid I've just resolved that I'm just not going to use it anymore. And I'll try my best to post videos in both YouTube and Vimeo, but I can't upload them at the same time. It's a sequential process, and they each take about 15 to 20 minutes each to upload, so it's really not practical to do both of them. But for the moment, at least during a transition until I get comfortable with YouTube, I'll try and do both of them. And I guess I'll with that, I'll wish all the best to all of you.